This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. We often record in New Orleans, but one of the best afternoons we ever spent was at the studios of KRVS in Lafayette, Louisiana, with singer-songwriter David Egan. It was 2014, and Egan looked back over a 40-year career, writing songs for Joe Cocker, Etta James, Percy Sledge, Johnny Adams, and Irma Thomas, among others. He described his music this way.
We write music for grown-up people. Grown-up music for grown-ass people.
This is a special rebroadcast of our conversation with David Egan, who's died at the age of 61.
There ain't nothing you can't get if you can smile. Keep smiling through it all. Yeah.
Smile with David Egan after the news. A million different ways to describe music. But the first thing that songwriters often talk about is whether a lyric sounds honest. Now, it's not up to us to say that David Egan was an honest man, but people like to sing David Egan's songs because his songs ring true. Since the early 1990s, some of the best interpreters of popular music have recorded Egan's work, including Joe Cocker, Percy Sledge, Etta James, Solomon Burke, Marsha Ball, and Irma Thomas.
But I'm a stone survivor, and I've seen this little old world go round. I'm a straight-through driver, and the ever-spinning wheels don't get me down.
Who stood right there beside you? You were so brave. And I'm crying out to no one as your footsteps fade.
Just give me some peace, love, and barbecue. Peace, love, and barbecue.
Working past the wee wee hours. There ain't no club too small. All I can say is, please, no more.
David Egan's world was populated with characters who've had their share of life's knockouts and split decisions. They're usually in love and at war all at the same time. But more often than not, his protagonist is familiar. Like someone you'd recognize at the gas station, in the grocery store, or even in the mirror. This is a special rebroadcast of Music Inside Out. David Egan died last week at the age of 61. In 2014, he joined us at the beautiful studios of KRVS in Lafayette.
I think you've been bugging my phone or something.
It's not just the NSA anymore. But, you know, what's so funny is that your songs always bespeak a fella who I imagine to have a lot of miles on him, but you don't look like you've got too many miles on you.
Oh, wow. That's deeply appreciated. Just flatter me right out of the bag. Yeah, there have been a lot of miles, and by some kind of blessing, I'm still standing.
Now, do you ever gauge a song by this measure of honesty, like an honest song? What is that to you?
Well, if it just rings true, I tell you something that I really go for, and it's impossible to get it all the time. But I was raised in a symphony family.
What is that?
An opera singer mom. An attorney dad who adored every move that she made and would pitch in and be vice president or treasurer or some kind of officer of the Shreveport Symphony growing up. So there were always guest conductors and ballet dancers and Philippine guitar troupes and opera singers and you name it, staying at the house, cast parties till 4 o'clock in the morning on school nights. There was always an atmosphere of tolerance and wonderment, eccentric characters everywhere. That's what a symphony family is.
Exactly.
A lot of people really take some cheap swipes at opera.
They're crazy.
Because that's some heavy stuff. And what I'm getting at is the element of catharsis.
Okay.
When the music and the words and the pure emotion works to a point where it just makes you kind of have an overflow of emotion as a listener. That outpouring of emotion happens in opera and musical theater, but it also happens in rock and roll and blues. And so having grown up in the opera and musical theater, that's an element that I always go, it's a standard, which I cannot always hit, but it's something that I like to go for in a song, in a soul ballad or whatever.
That's very interesting what you're saying, because in a way you're relating what you do today in the 21st century to what has been done by artists, you know, for hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, really. And so in terms of seeking that catharsis from the audience and from the song, then people can only experience if they sense a truth in that song.
Oh, absolutely. A truth and just a gut connection, you know, a connection of the heart. When Tom Petty says, "Ow, here comes my girl," and you just, at that point, you just want to kick something or put your fist through a window, not in anger necessarily, but just enjoy just that slap your mama moment, you know. Slap your knee, my God, he's got it.
Nothing that just feels so good, so free, so right. I know we ain't never gonna change our minds about it. Hey, here comes my girl. Here comes my girl. Yeah, she looks so right.
So, as I'm writing a song, sometimes when I get that sense, just as I'm working it out, then I know I'm onto something.
And so can you give us an example of...
Oh, God.
No. Not a whole song or singing, but some turn of phrase or line that you heard or dreamed or just thought of that made you think, okay, now I'm on to something. I mean, I can give you an example of your own work if you want me to, but...
Oh, that would be much easier for me because... I don't want to give examples of when I have reached my...
When you have reached the zenith of the mountain. But you have a particular gift for writing about how messy life gets in a domestic situation.
Yes. That is such a nice way of putting it.
So, for instance, the song that you wrote that Joe Cocker recorded and so many other people, you know, the Kate Brothers and Irma Thomas and Etta James, you know, Please No More.
Please No More.
That's a beautiful song.
Thank you.
And you know, and when you're listening to it or when I'm listening to it, you know, I'm so surprised when I hear the term Please No More used in two different contexts.
At the top of the chorus and at the end of the chorus.
That's exactly right. Do you mind if we listen to it a little bit?
Sure.
We start a fight. Who knows what for? Who knows who's winning? And who's keeping score? You say it's all right. As you slam the door, all I can say is, please no more.
Taking some liberties with grammar there, no doubt, but that is a definite example of a catharsis for me, particularly Joe Cocker's interpretation.
Exactly.
For me, my heart is in my throat the minute he starts singing.
You're trying to please no more.
Phrase like please no more is it's such an unusual phrase in the sense that, you know, it sounds almost like when I listen to that song, it sounds like a boxer who's just too tired to keep his hands up, you know?
Or just that domestic fight.
Yeah, that has gone on and on and on.
Until daylight.
Longer.
We've been there. Oh, my God.
Indeed we have, you know, and all the plates are broken and everything is gone, you know. But what's also fascinating about that song and a lot of songs that you write is that they seem to lend themselves to performers who have very strong voices, very who are thought to be in many ways both physically strong and artistically, you know what I mean, at the peak of their powers. You know?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think Percy Sledge really nailed that song. First You Cry, same thing, strong voice. But he brought that life to the song where you really, really get it to where, okay, that's a strong man who's pressing on through to the other side of this sorrow, of this pain. Okay, don't run away from it. Press through. Okay, first you cry.
Then you sigh.
Then you work your way through it, and eventually you come out the other side. And I'm not sure if I understood that until I heard Percy sing it.
It don't come cheap when they look like that. So hard to keep when they move so fast. Soon you'll find it's all for the best. Put the past behind and the hurt to rest. But first you cry, then you sigh. Somebody lied, and you can't run and hide. Don't be so sad, it ain't so bad. Oh, you'll get by.
Percy Sledge, I mean, you know, no one can doubt the man's vocal ability. You know,
a living, working legend.
Yes, but at the same time, and this is this great trick, there are moments in that song when his voice sounds androgynous.
Oh, yeah.
Which adds to the universality of the song. You know what I mean? Like, you were talking about a Tom Petty song earlier. You know, not many women can pull off a Tom Petty song. But your songs tend to lend themselves to both male and female interpretation in part. And I think that some of the artists understand that, at like Percy Sledge, and really play with that notion.
Indeed.
Somebody lied, and you can't run.
The great Percy Sledge with First You Cry, a song co-written by our guest, David Egan. That song was also recorded in Nashville by Irish singer Maura O'Connell.
When we spoke with him in 2014, David Egan said he looked for catharsis in his songs, the kind of emotional release that harkens back to the best classical literature and music. His mother is soprano Jasmine Egan, whose voice we heard earlier in the show. David Egan died last week in Lafayette at the age of 61. This is a special rebroadcast of our conversation with him. For more information and a playlist of Egan's songs, go to our website at musicinsideout.org. Coming up,
why some bands can't stay together but love to reunite. Stay with us. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. We're listening to a special rebroadcast of our talk with songsmith David Egan. Last week, Egan died after a struggle with cancer. He leaves behind 40 years of songwriting and performing. Egan and his frequent co-writer, Buddy Flett, often took on the fussin' and fightin' of love.
This one, Buddy and I hunkered down in a hotel room with the Cate brothers from Fayetteville, Arkansas. Great, talented duo. Twin brothers, matter of fact. When they're out, they recorded this song, and when their album came out, it was the same week that the Beatles anthology came out, and they outsold the Beatles in Arkansas for 3 weeks in a row. This translated into tens of dollars for Buddy and I. It's called After This Time. After this time, there'll be no more. It won't be easy to close that door. There's no tomorrow for us in sight. I'm walking away, babe. Gotta do what's right. So don't hold back. Let's make it good. I'd stay here forever if only I could. But it's over, baby. I've made up my mind after this time. Sweet temptation is bound to call, but there'll be no answer from me at all. No excuses, no more lies. If I see you coming, babe, I'll close my eyes. So deep in my heart, it's understood. I'd stay here forever if only I could. But it's over, baby, after this time. After this time. It's so hard to leave your good love behind. Might be the best thing this poor boy could find. I'm gonna miss you, baby, after this time. But there's no tomorrow for us in sight. And walking away, gotta do what's right. No excuses, no more lies. If I see you coming, baby, make it good. I'd stay here forever if only I could. But it's over, baby, after this time. Thank you.
That's After This Time, co-written by our guest this week, singer-songwriter David Egan. It apparently took a while for Egan's songs to get good. His earliest efforts as a youngster in Shreveport were, well...
they were horrible.
I want to hear a horrible song.
Oh, my God, really?
Yes.
Okay, We can edit this, right?
We can totally edit.
So, my feet, they really are aching. We spent the whole night just a rocking and a shaking. We spent the whole night dancing, just my baby and me. Just my baby and me. Pretty bad stuff, you know. Really, and there were lots of those, you know. And I would rip off songs that I knew and make up 18 verses to them.
You're supposed to do that, right? Is it half of, like, creativity?
Like drinking
theft?
wine, you know. Just make up the most horrible couplets. We'll go down and get old Joe. We'll go walking in the snow. Drinking wine. Drinking wine. But, you know, bad stuff. But, you know, we're talking about an elementary schooler and no Mozart, no genius, but just a guy in love with rock and roll.
So if you like rock and roll, this next song is a really good time. Now, this is John Mayall and the Blues Breakers, who, of course, you know, were, you know, one of the best blues bands in the UK, of Eric Clapton fame, of course, back in the day. Mavis Staples, who doesn't need any words of description. She's a work of art. And former Rolling Stone Mick Taylor. And they're singing your song, Wake Up Call. Let's listen.
Sleep, so don't make my wake up call too soon.
Working past the wee wee hours, there ain't no club too small. It's sleeping that I like, flat out on my back, but it won't be no time at all till that wake up call.
Now that is making lemonades out of lemon, right? I mean, this guy is tired. He don't want to get up and face the day outside of that. But it just makes it sound like, yeah, man, I hear you.
It's so true. I mean, I remember the band had a song called Get Up Jake, you know, that was kind of similar, a little in idea. But this one is, it's just so much fun to listen to. It's nicer when people like Mavis Staples and John Mayall are singing your songs, and Etta James are singing your songs. I mean, this is, I would imagine, what a songwriter is dreaming for.
Yeah.
And all. But do you ever worry that your song might fall into the wrong person's hands?
Not really. You know, a songwriter is always pretty happy for anybody to cover the song. It would have to be really, really bad, and that hasn't really happened yet. If it has happened, it's been kind of off my radar and probably off of everyone else's, too, because it's so bad. Right?
So we're talking with singer-songwriter David Egan, and let me ask you this. How did you end up as a tour guide in Nashville?
Okay. Well, when I was at North Texas, I was a member of the North Texas State University Jazz Singers, directed by a man named Paris Rutherford, who still directs jazz choirs today in the Dallas-Denton area. And, you know, we would do stuff by the Manhattan Transfer and the Singers Unlimited and stuff like that, really nice jazzy.
Jazz harmony and jazz, vocalization, right?
Jazz, vocal jazz. Mm. So what was the question? I'm sorry.
The question was, how did you get to Nashville as a tour guide?
Oh, okay. So as a member of the Jazz Singers, there was a connection with this huge jingle company in Memphis, and it was like an assembly line. They had staff composers, staff singers, and first call session people. Yeah. We would punch the clock at 8:30 in the morning and go in and sing, you know, KWKA weather, you know.
You know, I love this story.
Kiana was there to reference and all that. And really, really nice people there. And we would commandeer the studio at night and whooped some demos into shape. Well, when the jingle gig dried up for me, I left Memphis, went to Nashville, slept on a friend's floor. So he didn't have a sofa. But I had a buddy who was a staff writer for CBS Music. And so to Nashville I went, and I started knocking on doors. And, you know, was getting some nibbles, but might have been getting nowhere. I don't know. And so I got a job driving a van with a little microphone and a checkered shirt, picking tourists up at the hotels and showing them the homes of Marty Robbins and Barbara Mandrell and Johnny Cash, Conway Twitty. And I was still desperately learning Nashville, you know.
Sure.
I would go up, so I would take some wrong turns, and tourists were wondering, what's with this guy, you know? And I, oh, let me sing you a song.
So this is what they call paying your dues.
Oh, yeah. But while I was in that whole pursuit, I got a call from home to come and join this band, A-Train.
Okay. And what did A-Train do? What kind of music?
Well, A-Train did some of my originals and some of Buddy Flett's originals and some of the sax player John Howe's originals. And they had been together for about 5 years before they enlisted me. And they, you know, this was the 70s when they came together. They learned the Stax Memphis songs, Atlantic and all that, and they were able to throw a darn good toga party with Shout and a good Blues Brothers party and all that.
Yeah.
And also Mickey Honeycutt had just joined the band at that point.
Right.
So we had a full-time knocked-out singer. You know, it was just very good times for a band that had a certain X factor, of course.
Yes.
And they just made people want to make them a destination.
Do you think I'm worth your trouble, baby? Or do you think we've been wrong? If it's over, let me know. But don't make it too late, don't make it too long. 'Cause we don't have to be so long, baby. Don't have to lose this place we find. You're the only boy I ever knew. Make my blood run hot.
Like a souffle to some degree where,
yeah,
you know, you're all working to rise and then for some reason or another you don't get as high up the charts or whatever
it
as you
collapses
hope, and then it just collapses.
The souffle collapses.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of our highfalutin record deals didn't work out. Also, mm-hmm. we were kind of at each other's throats like boys will be.
That happens.
You know,
yeah.
Total insanity there. But the reunion business is good money. if you want to make some money in the music business, start a band, break up, and do reunions.
Good point.
But we have a great time doing it, and these guys I count among my very best friends.
I was surprised when I found out that you started working with Joelle Saunier and went on, of course, to work with other Cajun acts, because piano is not the first instrument that I think of when I think about a Cajun ensemble.
Right.
You know? Where do you fit?
Well, Joelle, you know, was doing some rock and country kind of things, but we would pull out the Cajun songs at the gigs, you know. Now, the band that I joined in Lafayette, Phile, they were just losing their guitar player, and they were willing to try a piano player. They were doing a lot of two-steps. It wasn't like a country two-step, like, it wasn't quite that apple dumpling, but it was more like, so it had this chunk, 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 chunk. DeJama, the fiddle player, called it a one-step, you know. Don't think of it as a two-step. Think of it as a one-step. One, 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 one.
Ah.
And so I had worked on this butterfly stuff from Dr. John and, you know, everybody that he was into.
Sure.
You know, they were a great band before, don't get me wrong,
Phile,
but
yes.
I kind of came along and put the cherry on top.
Sure.
Because no other band sounded like that. And so we took on this feeling of an old jalopy going down the road, shooting out spark plugs and springs, and somehow keeps on rolling like a cartoon car.
Right.
It hit a nerve with the dancers. And they felt like they can really dance to this.
Americans nationwide are becoming familiar with the dance culture of the Lafayette area, but it still bears describing to some degree.
Yeah, it's multi-generational. So how many regions, how many communities are there where everybody from great-grandma to the three-year-old toddler are all partying together and dancing together to the same groove, you know. It's not like, I don't do what my parents do.
Right, or we don't do what the kids do.
And anybody can dance with anybody.
Yes, and you're encouraged to touch when you dance.
Yeah, they're not hung up because you're right there, you're in plain sight of the community, you know. So if you're out of bounds, then you're going to get shut down real quick. But at the same time, I could walk up and ask a 12-year-old girl to dance and nobody would think twice.
Cove by the Cajun band Phile, featuring David Egan on piano. Coming up, if you knew how much David Egan loved Soul Queen Irma Thomas. Stay with us. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out. We're listening to a rebroadcast of our conversation with singer-songwriter David Egan, who died last week in Lafayette. Egan's songs appeal to some of the best interpreters of popular music, including Etta James and Johnny Adams. Egan's self-titled album starts with a big old hurt and ends with a sad, sad satisfaction. Makes you wonder where all that feeling came from.
I'll tell you something interesting about that, is that when I have been in just eaten up living through hell, I've been able to write some pretty happy songs, and my life is in a good place now with my family and everything, and I can still write some pretty down and dirty and sad things. And if you've lived through it, but you're not in the heat of it, it gives good perspective.
That's exactly right.
To have survived, you know, but not to be just in the flames of hell and tornadoes at that moment.
Yeah, and it's like you're making kind of the inchoate emotions that come from experience into something
complicated, grown-ass, adult emotions.
Very adult.
We write music for grown-up people. Grown-up music for grown-ass people.
But, you know, speaking of grown-up people, you have a special kinship with Irma Thomas, it seems. Obviously, she loves your work because she has recorded a number of your songs, you know, over the years. I mean, we're talking If You Knew How Much, Stone Survivor, These Honeydews, Underground Stream. I mean, this woman
sing
likes...
Sing it one more time like that?
That's right. Sing it one more time like that. I mean, you and she have traveled the same road at some point in your cosmic lives, you know?
What a fortuitous friendship to have gained her friendship. I can't tell you what that means to me, because she, to me, is in every way a queen, truly a queen. When she was doing her After the Rain album, she was out at Dockside in Milton, Louisiana, close to Lafayette. And Irma picked out a few, you know, contenders. And
like, for instance, If You Knew How Much or Stone
Survivor.
If You
Knew How Much. So we cut it one time, and then Irma told me, you know, I'm just not sure I understand where you're coming from with that song, you know. And I just said, well, you know, you got a serious crush on somebody, and you just know that they don't feel the same way. So if you show your cards, then they're not even going to want to hang out with you, because they don't want to lead you around, and you don't want to lose that. You want to at least be in their presence, even if you have to keep your loving feelings to yourself, you know. And she said, okay, let's go cut it. And we went out, and we did one more take, and she came out of the vocal booth with tears streaming down her face, and she said, now I know where you're coming from. And that was the take.
I remember those words that you spoke. You danced on my chances, crushed out my hope. When you broke my dreams in two, and you didn't even know. Broke my dreams in two, try not to let it show. 'Cause if you knew how much I love you, which is more than I could say, every time you saw me coming, you'd probably turn away. You'd hold back the smile, seize me through each day. If you knew what I was thinking, you'd never look my way. You'd never look my way. Give you all my love, but I try not to let you know. Give you all my love, and I try not to let it show. 'Cause if you knew how much I love you, which is more than I could say, every time you saw me coming, you'd probably turn.
So we're talking with singer-songwriter David Egan. And Mr. Egan...
David.
What
please
did I
call
say?
Me David.
Oh! I've had a ball, and you've just been so generous with your time. And thank you so much for being with us, you know.
Yourself.
The lovely studios of KRVS. And I can't let you go without without asking you to sing any song you want.
All right. I'll do something from the new album. It's called Blues How They Linger. Birds fly for the winter, sat to where it's warm. Fasten down your windows, people, it's only passing storm. Cold wind, blue loving, gentle breeze done carried her away. But the blues, how they linger, and I think they're here to stay. Sunrise in the morning, darkness on the run. Nightfall comes calling when tired old day is done. Sad song on the radio, soft refrain, and soon it's gone. But the blues, how they linger, oh, they linger on and on. was such a man, but he sure ran out of luck. Luck runs hot and cold, people. In past, they rise and fall. But the blues, how they linger, since she packed her bags and walked.
How They Linger. Singer-songwriter David Egan has died at the age of 61. This was a rebroadcast of our 2014 conversation with him at KRVS in Lafayette. And you've been listening to Music Inside Out. Our show was produced by Lynette Johnson, Aaron Thomas, Kayla Green, and Jason Ryan. Music Inside Out is produced in partnership with WWNO. Special thanks go to Beverly Egan Houston. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out.
Major support for Music Inside Out comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection. Music Inside Out also receives support from the Ruth U. Fertel Foundation, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, Baba Jim Istanbul Studios and Mastering, the Arts Council New Orleans, Surf Song Realty of Orange Beach, Alabama, Adam Newman Designs, and WWNO. Donations to Music Inside Out are tax deductible thanks to our partnership with the National Performance Network. For more information on how you can support our program, please go to our website at musicinsideout.org/support.